The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords.
This is the Rental Income Podcast.
And now, Dan Lane.
It sounds like you've had a rough couple of months with your rentals. What happened?
Our portfolio of 40 rentals had a pretty rough couple of months. We were losing almost $8,000 of uncollectible rent for a while due to tenants having various financial issues and not being able to pay rent. You know, thankfully, we rebounded from that pretty well recently, but it definitely gave us a little scare there for a second.
On the podcast today, Anton is going to walk us through how he was able to turn things around and what he's learned from this experience. Joining us on the podcast today for his second appearance is Anton Ivanov from San Diego. We'll take a real quick break. We'll come right back and we'll jump right into the interview. The first step in buying a rental property is to get pre-qualified, and I would suggest you work with a lender that specializes in working with investors, because the last thing you want to have happen is to get to closing and find out the money's not there and you can't close. The lender that I recommend is Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. She's a nationwide lender, and she'll pre-qualify you for free if you mention Rental Income Podcast. Find out more today. Contact Chaley at ridgelendinggroup.com. That's R-I-D-G-E, lendinggroup.com. NMLS 42056. Anton, so it's been a couple of years since you were last with us. For anyone that maybe didn't hear your first appearance, can we start off by you telling us a little bit about your rental portfolio?
So me and my wife were, we had quite a journey. It was kind of over 6 years, 7 years ago now that we started building our rental portfolio. And we've went through various strategy. We started with house hacking, some multifamily. We did turnkey properties out of state. Nowadays, we're at 40 total units. So that's spread out across California, Georgia, Birmingham, Alabama, and then Kansas City. So 40 units, about 12,000, 13,000 of monthly cash flow. Kind of remote. Most of the properties remote, except for a few by where we live in San Diego. And we use professional management for all of them as well.
So it sounds like you've got a great portfolio and everything seems to be working out great, right? I mean, you've got good tenants and you've got good properties.
It's been fairly smooth sailing up until the COVID pandemic, I would say.
And that's what I want to talk to you about. So things kind of started getting weird around March. That's kind of when things started kind of shutting down. Is that when you ran into trouble? Was it right away, or was it a little bit delayed when your tenants started having trouble paying?
It was fairly immediate. It probably wasn't March, but kind of April, May, and then especially going into June is where we started seeing issues. And, we don't buy in kind of C, D class areas. So most of our rentals are in very middle of the line. I call them B class neighborhoods. So these are kind of working, normal working Americans, working people. Right when the pandemic kind of hit and most of the states shut it down, and I think by April, May, most of the country was shut down.
Right.
And a lot of the businesses were laying off workers or furloughing them. That's when we really started seeing issues, which basically boiled down to people, I would say about 15 to 20% of our tenants. We realized that they were not going to be able to pay their rent just because they either lost income from their job, they had a lot less income, or a combination of both.
And so your rentals are in different areas. What were the tenants that weren't paying? were they all in the same area or the same property manager, or did you have problems with some of your California properties too?
The California were not so much affected. We had problems in Georgia and mostly in Kansas City, just because the Kansas City is where the bulk of our units is. So that was kind of hit the hardest. Okay. But definitely had problems in a few different areas.
So let's walk through kind of what you did. So the first of the month came, or the fifth, or whenever the rents are technically late, and you realized, okay, you know, we're really short. What did you do? Like, did your managers start reaching out to your tenants to kind of figure out what the tenant situation was? Or like, how did you handle that?
So we came up with this three-prong approach, as I call it. The first thing we did, and we started doing this with all of our properties, with all the property managers eventually. But the one in Kansas City, especially, that we started working with, our first step of the process was to notify the tenants that were affected about the available financial programs to them. So we made this really detailed. It was a several-page document in the PDF that had links to local and state unemployment programs, local and federal, kind of rent relief programs. There are some utility relief programs, or they could get part of their utility bill reimbursed. Obviously, unemployment, how they could apply, where could they apply, other financial resources like through banks and credit unions. So we put together this very detailed document for especially local programs, not just on the federal level. And the first thing we did with all of the tenants, and we sent them this document, because believe it or not, we actually got a good response from some of them. They said, hey, I didn't know about this, or I wasn't sure if I would qualify. So we kind of helped the tenants help themselves, so to speak. So, but by doing that, we felt like it was the right thing to do. We educated them on what's available. Maybe they missed something. And it did help a lot of them, I believe, at least. You know, we had quite a few reach out to us and thank us for sending that. So that was kind of our first step. The second step came about when a tenant would contact us and say, hey, I don't think I'll be able to pay rent. So just kind of to make it a little more systematic, we asked them to some sort of proof of financial hardship, or, a note from their employer that they were laid off, something, just to prevent kind of large scale abuse. We had some worries that some people may take advantage of this. I don't think anybody really tried, but we just asked for, hey, can you kind of give us an idea of what's going on with your situation, just so we know it? Is this permanent? Do you expect this to last just a few months? I don't think any tenant had any problem providing us with that. And then following that, we had a third step, which was actually to work out a rent deferment plan. So we didn't do any forgiveness. We did basically deferments, and most of them looked something like, either the tenant pays half rent for, two or three months, if they're able, or in certain cases, we allow them not to pay any rent for up to two, three months. And then we had a repayment schedule that started after that period and spread out over 6 months following. So we worked with each individual tenant. We tried to understand what their situation was. I don't think we were processing any evictions during this time, and primarily because evictions were halted in the majority of America. And we also didn't feel like it was the right thing to do quite there. So we actually had some tenants that were already in the eviction process going into the pandemic. So they had some payment issues or other concerns, and we were going to, do evictions on them prior to that. And then when the pandemic came, we actually reached back out to them, explained the situation, and got them on a payment plan. A lot of them.
Really? Okay. So somebody was about to be evicted and you had turned that around so that now they were able to get some help and get caught up. And so now here we are a few months later. Did those tenants work out?
I don't regret doing it. We had a few tenants that we kind of, a couple that we did, they say, hey, they will pay. And then they ended up not following through with the payment plan. But a big chunk of them, I would say the majority, actually did start paying. They were happy that we would work with them. because I don't think they wanted to, you know, to be obviously find themselves without a place to live during these times, especially if they lost their job. So I think we found a as win-win scenario as we could possibly find in this situation, which allowed us to keep basically all of our tenants there, be understanding of their situation, of their financial conditions at the time, you know, work out a plan with them, and at the same time, you know, kind of still provide us cash flow as the operators of these rental properties, because obviously we have to keep paying the loan payments and the, you know, the maintenance and repairs, utilities, and all of that. I'm pretty confident that we're going to survive this period. I don't have any doubts that we're going to be, you know, kind of losing our properties or facing.
I 100% agree. I mean, you are handling this right, and I think you're really positioned well. Now, what about your property managers? When you went to your property managers and said, look, this is what I want to do, this is how I want to approach it. Were the property managers on the same page? Because, you know, I imagine you're not their only customer. I imagine that they probably had a system or a way that they wanted to handle the situation. What, were they on board with you right away, or how did that work out?
As a buy and hold investor, you know, with rentals, especially out of state rentals, property management is probably one of the most important things that are going to contribute to your success or failure as an investor. You know, other than obviously buying a good property in a good location, property management is key, and you need to find a company that you're comfortable working with. You know, and you don't want to fall into like the two extremes that I call it. One being a person who is trying to micromanage their day-to-day operations, because nobody wants that. They're going to get sick of you. And you're probably not going to get as good service if you're trying to dictate exactly what they do on a daily basis. Yeah. At the same time, you don't want to be that guy who just kind of gives them the problem, gives them the keys, says, okay, you guys got it now. And then just forgets about it, because that's how, you know, that's how things can slip through.
Right.
If you're not monitoring it, you're just one property out of a 500 or something that they manage. So I think the sweet medium is really somewhere in the middle there, where you're not necessarily telling them what to do on a daily basis, but you do check up on things. You know, you do review the monthly statements, just general maintenance trends, cost trends. And if you see something that's kind of concerning, that seems out of place, you should have no problem reaching out to the property manager, letting them know, asking them questions, and they should be willing to work with you. You know, I've had to let one property management company go in the past because I just didn't feel like they were responsive or willing to kind of address the issues that I was bringing up. And that's the reality of things. There's a lot of property management companies out there that are just not that great, in my opinion. And as an investor, you need to be realistic with, you know, kind of after a few years of working with them. If it's not working out, then don't be afraid to find a different one.
Right. Yeah. So as soon as things happened, as soon as things started going bad, you got a plan together, you had good management in place. And then the other thing that I think it really gives you a lot of peace of mind is you've always been really big on having cash reserves. That you don't like to cut
Correct.
Things too close to the edge. Talk me through, like, just knowing that you had some cash in the bank, was that a good feeling? Did that give you a lot of comfort going into this?
Oh, absolutely. I think there is, you know, I see this a lot, especially with kind of younger, newer investors who are starting out. They're so eager to buy their first property, buy their second one, build their portfolio, that the whole cash reserves, safety buffer situation oftentimes, you know, get ignored. You know, a lot of people, we do a podcast with you, other folks reach out to me and be like, hey, I'm, you know, so-and-so, I have $50,000 to invest. Where should I buy the property? Or, you know, can I buy a $200,000 property with 50 grand or something like that? And one of the first questions I ask is like, okay, well, what about, you know, okay, you have this $50,000. Do you have reserves set aside? What's going to happen after you, you know, spend this $50,000? You're going to have some fallback money. And most of the times the answer is no. unfortunately. And I've been always a huge proponent of kind of building in both safety margins into your cash flow calculations and having adequate reserves. So, you know, when I'm estimating cash flow for rental properties, I'm usually super conservative with maintenance estimation, vacancy estimation, capital expenditure estimation. So I would rather pass on a property that is kind of okay and wait for another few months for a really great one that gives me that good safety buffer. So, you know, if I see folks, you know, post calculations on BiggerPockets, others, you know, websites, and they say, yeah, I think vacancy is going to be 1 or 2%. 1 or 2% a year is like a few days a week.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like that gives you, even if it's a hot market, you know, where I have properties in California that basically get rented immediately, it's going to be more than a week of vacancy. Like, trust me, sure. By the time you turn it, repair, inspection. So it's just not realistic. You know, I always bake, you know, safety buffers in my calculations. So when something like this happened, you know, with the pandemic and the non-payments, the first line of defense essentially that we had was that cash flow safety buffer, because when we bought these properties initially, I accounted for, fairly large vacancy percentages, maintenance percentages. So right out of the bat, that gives you a good buffer in case there is increased vacancies, non-payments, late payments. Go ahead.
So what do you think is a good, like, if someone is, you know, if someone's learning from this and they're thinking, right, you know, I need to make sure I have some money set aside, what do you think a good amount, whether it's a dollar amount or a monthly amount of a certain number of months of rent to have set aside, like, what do you think someone should be shooting for?
So I use, you know, the same principles that you hear personal finance advisors and gurus recommend for a personal emergency fund, which is typically somewhere around 6 months of expenses set aside as cash. I use the exact same principle for our entire rental portfolio. So for every property that we buy, for every rental unit that we own, we set aside about 5-6 months of operating expenses worth of cash. So basically, if the property generated no rent for whatever reason, you would still be able to pay about 6 months of expenses, including your mortgage payment, utilities if you have a maintenance, repairs, insurance, taxes, all of that for 6 months. So it's a fairly hefty chunk of cash, especially for a portfolio of our size. And somebody may look at this and say, wow, you have, you know, this money just sitting around. You could go and buy another 5 properties or something with it. And I think that's great. I just think that cash is so valuable in situations like this, like we had with the COVID pandemic, because that reserve gave us so much confidence that, hey, even if this lasts for a year or longer, if we have a lot of non-payments, we'll be okay. You know, we didn't have to apply for loan forgiveness or loan deferments. We didn't have to apply for PPC or other programs, which I don't think there's anything wrong with. We were just thankful that we didn't have to deal with them because we had these cash reserves. So I think it's one of the most important things you can do early on. And the best way I found it is to just set, you know, if you don't have a lot of cash starting out, or you spend most of your cash buying, for example, your first property, at least set a little bit aside, you know, let's say $5,000. Just put it in, you know, in a savings account. And then out of your monthly cash flow that you're receiving from that property, contribute a little bit to your emergency fund, as you will, you know, your property emergency fund, until you build it up. And then do that for every subsequent property that you buy, and just always make sure you have that reserve.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. Well, so now that you've survived this, you've gotten through this, is there anything you would do differently going forward if anything like this happens again?
To be honest, the answer would probably be no, Dan.
Good. Okay.
I kind of pat myself on the back, so to speak. I think everything that we've done, including being, like I said, conservative with cash flow calculations and having reserves, that really set us up financially. as kind of a business, if you will, you know, this rental portfolio business to withstand a pandemic like this. And then, you know, our work that we've put into finding good property management companies, working with them, having a good understanding, that gave us the ability to be able to be confident in their response and how they handled. Obviously, we helped them out a little bit by coming in and helping them establish these programs. But overall, I think, you know, especially, you know, reading some other stories that other landlords have to deal with, I think you had somebody on your podcast share their experience mm-hmm. before. And I think we've done basically everything I could think of, you know, to survive this. And I feel like it was also, you know, a big item for me was to be fair with our tenants. Like I mentioned, I didn't feel like it was the right thing to do to just start evicting tenants left and right. I felt like we should have some, you know, obviously compassion for them and try to work with them, you know, allow them to have a place to live during the pandemic, but at the same time continue paying rent a little bit, maybe at a reduced rate, or then defer it at a later date, because obviously we need to continue having some cash flow for operating expenses and paying the utilities and the repairs and the maintenance on those units.
I love it. Well, tell us about DealCheck. DealCheck is an app that you've developed to help investors analyze rental properties. Tell me a little bit about the program.
You can look up sales comps to help you estimate the after repair values of each property. You can look up rental comps right inside our software. So if you're buying a rental property, obviously you need to know how much you can rent it for. You can look it up right there in our software. We have an offer calculator. So this is your max offer calculator. If you, for example, buying a flip using the 70% rule or something like that, and you need to figure out, well, hey, what's the maximum offer price I can, you know, offer to the seller on this property to still meet my criteria, my metrics, it'll tell you right there. And then we have a cool reporting feature, which you can take all of your analysis, projections, maps, all of that, put it in one nice PDF or online report, share it with your lenders, your partners, your clients, if you're an agent, your buyers list, if you're a wholesaler. So we've really tried to build an all-encompassing solution for doing due diligence on the property, researching the market conditions with the sales and rental comps, obviously calculating your profit return metrics. And you can get started with it for free. We have a free tier. You can use it free forever. It's not a trial. It's not like kind of, you know, use it for 14 days, then you have to pay. So you just go to dealcheck.io or download the DealCheck mobile app for your iOS or Android. And then just for, you know, the listeners of the Rental Income Podcast, Dan, we have a special promo code. If you type this in, when you, you know, we do have a few upgrade plans as your business grows, as your portfolio grows, you'd like to access more features. It's still really affordable, a few cups of coffee a month. But if you type in rental25, so that's R-E-N-T-A-L 25, rental25 promo code, you'll get 25% off, which makes it on some, most plans less than $10 a month, so very cheap. Rental25 promo code specifically for the listeners of your podcast.
Thank you, Anton. I appreciate you giving everybody a discount. If anybody wants to look up the link to Anton's app or you want to check out the promo code later on, I've got a link to everything on the website. You can find it all at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode290. I'd like to thank today's sponsor for making this episode possible. It's Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. If Anton inspired you and you're ready to buy your first rental or you want to add to your portfolio, the lender that I recommend is Chaley Ridge. She's a nationwide lender and she specializes in helping investors buy rental properties. She has a ton of different loan programs, and she can find something customized to you for your unique situation. If you want to find out more or set up a time to talk to Chaley, just go to ridgelendinggroup.com. That's R-I-D-G-E, lendinggroup.com. If you mention Rental Income Podcast, she will waive all the pre-qualification fees. NMLS 42056. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. If this is your first time here, make sure you subscribe. We have new interviews every single Tuesday. And if you subscribe, you'll get notified as soon as they come out. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.